Here we are again, another episode of the What's Up Cuz podcast. I'm Dr. David Brock, and I have the pleasure and honor of being in studio with the one, the only, the always gorgeous, always dressed to perfection, always ready to represent, Dr. Sharon McDaniel. What's up, cuz?
What's up, cuz? What's going on with y'all?
Oh, life is lifing.
You know what? That part, right? As you would say, that part.
It doesn't stop. Life keeps going.
It keeps going and going and going and going until you just say, I've had enough. I'm going to chill for a minute.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And just take a pause, you know, for the cause to rejuvenate. You know, you got to. I'm telling you, we have a lot going on, a lot of things happening, and a lot of things, you know, going. Some things we're in control of, and then there's sometimes we're not in control of things.
That's,
you know,
right.
We got to deal with it as it comes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm grateful for another day, grateful for another opportunity. And as I said, it's always my honor and pleasure to be in studio with you. We always have such a good time. And then we look down and say, oh, my God, where did time go?
I know. We're going to try to keep this to under an hour. Because, you know, it'll be like, oh, 90 minutes later, we just on a topic one.
Right. We didn't get to question one.
Question one. Yeah.
Tune in next time for question two.
That's so true.
So we've done some podcasts, and we've got a lot of feedback, and we hope that you, our listeners, are really tuning in. We've tackled, some topics and subjects. We just did a recent podcast around domestic violence and intimate partner violence that has gotten a lot of reviews and mm-hmm. a lot of comments. And I've heard from a lot of our people that have listened that enjoyed it. And I'm hoping that if you haven't listened to it, that you'll go back and take in that episode, you know, to really get a grasp on what's happening so we can stay on top of what's going on in the world itself, you
yes.
know. So I know we always bring topics, and we try to inform our people, and we're unapologetic about trying to reach our congregation.
There's
the preacher in me.
There's
the bishop. Sorry, y'all. To reach our listeners out there in our community. To really educate them and put it where they can get it and take
yes.
a nugget or two away, you know. So it's always an honor, and we try to do it in such a simplistic fashion. So I'm excited about being in studio again and breaking into another topic that we know will spill over into a deeper walk as we talk about relationships and embracing relationships. And I know today we're coming from not necessarily the aspect of an intimate relationship between lovers or whatever, but we're talking in totality
yes.
about relationships. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to boil it down, if you will, and center on romantic relationships between male and woman, or partners and so forth. But today we just want to set a stage around relationships, period, because they're essential, and we're built. The Bible clearly tells us that we're built for relationships.
Mm-hmm.
We're not built to be alone. And when I hear people say things like, I don't need nobody and things like that, I look at them like they're a little strange or crazy,
right.
because
mm-hmm.
we are built to give and to receive and to be helpers. The Bible actually says helpers one of another, which
right.
means, again, we have to be in relationships.
Relationship.
So we're going to break into this and have some fun and talk about it and, you know, really see where we go with it. So before we break in, what are your thoughts around this? This was your baby. You
yeah.
brought this to the table.
I mean, I really felt that it was important. And as you said, talking and coming off the podcast of intimate partner violence and just relationships in general, I really thought that we need to talk about relationships. What does that mean? And so, as you talked about, we are built to be in relationships, but what relationships, right? I mean, it could be intimate relationships, but it could also be familial relationships. It could be work relationships. So we are conditioned to be in relationships, but I think each of them brings a different, a consideration, if you will. So
okay.
intimate relationships are one thing, relationships with your coworkers is different. And then you think about the larger community. So we wanted to break that down. And I think it's just really important, particularly as we see the tensions between relationships between Black women and Black men right now. And ultimately, as you said, we'll narrow the conversation down to those type of relationships. But I'm seeing and hearing such toxicity in our community. Mm-hmm. And wanted to uplift, like, I believe in love. I believe in relationships. I believe in wholesome relationships, right, and relationships where people really like each other. And I'm saying whether they like each other at work or church or community and intimate relationships, whatever those, however that construct of that relationship looks like. So I really wanted to just talk today about how do we introduce the concept of relationships. And, you know, as we think about, you know, we've evolved. I kind of put the blank in terms of the number of decades, but you could certainly say how many decades you've been on this earth.
Right. Twirling around for six decades.
Well, me too. But at the end of the day, we've been in relationships for six decades. And so as we dive into it, what has that meant for you? How have you evolved over six decades of being in multiple types of relationships? Yeah.
Well, that's a good question. When you talked about it and talked about coming and we were going to sit down and talk about this, the one thing I began to do is just jot some thoughts down. And one of the things that I thought about was, for me, I think that the evolution of relationships, they're complex sometimes. Mm-hmm, they're complex and they're unique at the same time.
Yes.
You know, and I think processing that sometimes requires sometimes daily, weekly, monthly management, depending on the level of relationship you have with someone. Mm-hmm. And so I think for me, I hope I've evolved. But when I look back at myself, and I can say, and I tease and I say this sometime when I'm talking to people, when my 60-year-old self looks back at 50, he says, And when 50 looks at 40, he says, interesting. Mm. 40 looks at 30 and says, wow. 30 goes all the way back down, and you know, and God help me if I let my 60-year-old self look at the 20. He's like, boy, you was out here crazy. Mm-hmm. you have no clue.
Thank goodness for growth and development.
Exactly. So I think that along the way, I would hope to be able to say and have demonstrated growth and change and development. And you know, I was talking about this Sunday, and even this morning, I was saying that, you know, I recognize now that I'm not a failure. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we say, I failed at this and I failed at that. Mm-hmm. I'm not a failure. I'm like Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison failed thousands of times trying to make the light bulb. Mm-hmm. But when he was interviewed, he said, I'm not a failure. I just discovered 10,000 ways that didn't work.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's a difference in that. So I looked at that and said, you know what? I'm recognizing I'm not a failure. I just found some ways that didn't work, and I had to change and keep on going until I found ways that work. So I think it's daily maintenance again, and it has, again, that uniqueness. Every relationship, I believe, has a unique concept to it, a unique part that has to be managed by the parties involved. Mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'll stop there for now.
No, and I was just thinking about, as you were talking about failure, I've always looked at failure as opportunities. And so I've never looked at it like, you know, how I think the larger discourse around what failure looks like, oh, something is wrong, or you did not do something correctly. But as you said, it's just really an opportunity to look at things from a different perspective. And John Maxwell has a wonderful book, Failing Forward. And I read that many, 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 many years ago. Because when things don't look so well, what is the thing that you failed that you're moving forward? It's new knowledge, right, like you said. And so when we think about relationships, you know, those that we believe that may have gone astray, there is information in those intimate relationships that didn't work out. So again, looking at failure in the context of it's new information, it's new learning. So I really like what you're saying there.
I like what you said, because I remember when I was in school, in one of my professors in the seminary actually was talking about opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I don't get me wrong, I'm wrong maybe about the nationality of people, but I think he said it was Oriental people or something. They don't have the word failure in their dialect. And he was pointing out that's why they can come to our the United States or come into our communities where we say it's failure, and they'll open up a store, a nail salon, a hair salon, a clothing and have success because they see that as opportunity. Right. So there is that word is not in their dialect. So they don't come around understanding failure. They are looking for opportunity. Right. So when you said that this brought that back to the fore.
Good. Absolutely.
You know, yeah. And so I think you're right though. I mean, there's new information, and I think the error would be, and notice I said error and not failure, the error would be not looking back and applying that information to become a better version of yourself.
That's right. So what is the knowledge that we've gained as a result of failing forward, which is opportunity, right? And so how does that then resonate with you when you think about, and we'll just say relationships at work?
Yeah. Ooh, well, sometimes I think, you know, relationships at work, and I was saying sometimes they're different. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I've learned to do is for the sake of making the point, categorizing the relationships. Mm-hmm. I understand the difference in being my coworker. I don't have to go to the mall with you. I don't really truly have to like you. You know, we're here for a purpose, a specific task to get a job done. I have my assignments, you have yours, and we need to figure out how to come together. And even if we do disagree agreeably, so that the end of the day we accomplish the task or the goal. So when I'm in a work environment with someone, I clearly understand this relationship is put in my box of work relationship category, which means after I get done, I punch the clock, I get in my car, I don't have to deal with you until 9 in the next morning. Right. You know what I'm saying? For the most part.
Not in the next morning.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I have to learn how to, I'm looking for the word that I want to say, put it in the box or category and put it there so that when I leave work, I'm leaving it there. Right. You know what I'm saying? I'm leaving Sheila and her crazy self over there. Whoever Sheila is, I'm not talking about you. I apologize. I apologize, Sheila, if you're listening. You know, I'm leaving her over there. You know what I'm saying? And not making it personal.
Right.
I think sometimes we take some things personal that we should not take personal,
right.
You know, and I learned this in over time when, well, this is through some of my work when I was working, even still working with you, but working with you, you had us do a personality test, the Myers-Briggs. If you all have never done Myers-Briggs, we recommend it. It's highly recommended you do it because what that did for me was it helped me to understand that person not necessarily is mean, nasty, or anything. It's just the fact that our personalities don't get along.
Absolutely.
You know, they don't mix, and it's okay.
Well, and it's really not so much your personalities, it's the way in which you move about the world.
Yeah.
So as an example, even though I'm doing this podcast, I'm really an introvert. But I say that I'm an extrovert by the fact that I do the work that I do.
Right.
And so, but I need a lot of time to regroup. So I'll go home and get some energy and come back out. You know, I say, you're like the mayor. You are Mr. Extrovert. I'm like, oh Lord, does he not know any, I mean, does everybody know him? And so, you know, so you get energy from people and the world. And so sometimes I'm like, okay, what I'm going to do, sir, is you're going to be over there and I'm going to go sit in my corner. So, you know, you walk into the party and you'll be like, hey, I'm here. And I'm like, oh, please don't look at me. You know? so really, when you're thinking about that in the context of the office, then, you know, if you're introvert and you're dealing with extroverts and they're constantly taking from you and you're an introvert, you have to figure out how do you get space to regroup.
Right.
And so that's the thing. It's so not so much your personality because there's no right or wrong personality. Right. It's just the way in which we move about the world.
And I think you hit something there. I think that we have to manage us. And if you know what it takes to recharge your batteries, you have to do that. You have to manage. And you know, like my car or even this cell phone sitting here, this cell phone will get to the place where it'll say you got 2%. And then after 2%, you're done. Until you give me a charge, you're done. And I think sometimes we ignore our 2%, our battery levels, the car got a light on, you know, my car will come on and then it'll pop up and say, do you want me to find you a gas station?
Because
I'm running low. It's like, bing, you got, then after a while, it comes up on my GP, on my screen. You know, do you want me to locate a gas station? I'm like, no, I'm good.
Wow.
But it's trying to tell me, well, I don't know where you're going, sir, But I do recognize you're running low on fuel.
That is so good. And so it prompts a question for me. What happens when you have relationships that drain you?
Ooh.
Have you ever had that before, I wonder?
Oh, that was jab. That was a shot fired in the studio, everybody. No, I'm teasing.
I'm just wondering.
Really? I've learned, Doc, that. See, I'm getting excited about this conversation, y'all. I'm sorry. I've learned that I can love somebody and not like them.
Talk about it.
And so when I don't like you, when you drain me, because truthfully, I'm not in my makeup. I recognize what I don't like, mm-hmm. but is necessary is confrontation.
He will run like the road runner from confrontation.
You hear me? There was times when I was at the secretary, you would say, Dr. Brock, mm-hmm. you can't do, because I would run from the confrontation and then I would store it up, frustration.
Ooh.
And the frustration would be building up until.
And then the volcano erupted.
And yes, and then mm-hmm. somebody says, you know, one little small thing and it's like. And you're like, you're sitting there saying, Dr. Brock, I really need you to look at, like, the reaction to this thing.
That there was
the
no soda
right,
in
exactly.
the refrigerator right. for training.
Right, you know? And so you're like losing it. But what I had to recognize was these individuals or things were depleting me, were draining mm-hmm. me. And I was not doing the necessary work or mirror work or saying, hey, David, okay, go over there, woosah, count to 10. So now, you know, we talked and you were like, count to 10.
Yes.
You know, and now I even ask myself before I respond, is it needful? Is it necessary? And is it wholesome?
Oh, that's good.
You know,
needful, yeah. necessary, and wholesome.
Yeah, is it needful for me to, because I learned now, you know, I'm thankful. I've learned now that I don't have to respond to everything.
Not everything needs a response.
And not at all, mm-hmm. you know. And so I don't have to respond to everything. And then if I do respond, is it a needful response?
Mm-hmm.
And is it uplifting? Is it wholesome? Is it going to help the situation? Yeah. Or is it going to make it even worse? So when I'm contemplating those things, you know, I try to respond from that aspect now. Didn't always, but
and
I try
that,
now.
Is that in the counting you're thinking
that
about?
That is in
then?
The counting of 10. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm counting a 10. And sometimes when I get down there, if I'm counting from 10 to 1 and I get mm-hmm. to 2 or 1 and I still don't have, I start over again. 10, 9, 8.
Count to 20. Okay.
20.
I need about a 30
yes,
or right
exactly.
over
here. Exactly. And sometimes, you know what I just say, you know, because it's something in the Bible that the Bible actually says to go in the cool of the
yes,
day.
Yes, yes.
You know, when you've had a chance to process it and to think about it, you know, because sometimes we respond in the here and now, right, mm-hmm. in that moment, and we do damage,
yes.
you know, because,
I've been
you
here.
Know, yeah, mm-hmm. words have power.
Yes.
And you can't get it back. You can't undo. I tell people all the time, you can't unring a bell,
mm-hmm.
you know, so once you've rung it and the sound is out, you can't take it back.
That's
so
right.
So when I'm encountering these individuals that are draining to me, I've learned to manage them based on my battery level.
Oh, that's so good.
So if I got 85%, then I can give you like 5% maybe. But if I got 2%, oh, I can't do you today.
Right.
You know, I
can't. Well, you know, I've learned how to do that, right? And I, you know, but one of the things that you're really introducing is this opportunity to announce your battery level.
It's necessary.
You know, because I mean, I know what my battery level is, but I have not announced, you know, I really am only on 2%. And so today would not be a good day to have that conversation. And I'll see you tomorrow if that's okay.
You know what? And that's a good point.
That's really good.
That's good because mm-hmm. that's it. And unfortunately, some may take that response as rejection or as, oh, she thinks she all that. No, I'm telling you, if you keep pressing me, I'm going to chop your head off, put you in a blender.
Yeah.
I'm going to feed you to the wolves and everything else.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be looking at me all crazy. Now, I told you, Shaquita, to let me go. I told you that I wasn't trying to do this today.
But you've seen me at my 2%, and it's not a good thing. So
exactly.
I'm really trying to, like you said, to do that mirror work where it says, you know, I need to take control so that I do no harm, right? And so I think, but one of the things, though, I think that you're also introducing is that if it's something new that you're starting, you just can't say, sir, I'm on 2%.
Right.
Because that's not going to make sense.
Right, exactly.
So you have to introduce, like, one of the things, the way I'm really dealing with my EQ, as an example, emotional intelligence, is that I am going to now say what my battery level is. So if you've announced that to your loved ones, your colleagues, your work, you know, your church mates or whatever. And so now I'm going to introduce that where my battery level is. So if I'm saying I'm on 2%, you now know that this is not a good time, and that when my battery is recharged, we can have that conversation or go out for dinner or whatever we're going to do. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so I think that that's really good and really helpful in terms of preserving those relationships and also dealing with folks who may drain you. But the other thing I would offer for consideration is that we have conversations. We have courageous conversations. There's a book called Courageous Conversations that we've read that really talk about when people are draining you, right?
Right.
How do we have those courageous conversations with our, and those are typically in our intimate space, our family members, our, you know, intimate partner or whatever, you know, to say, listen, I mean, you know, I'm drained here. And when we get into these conversations, they're more draining than others. So how do we introduce that into the conversation? And particularly when you think about the context of our faith too.
Yeah. Well, when you were talking, I think it comes down to one of the characteristics when I was thinking about relationships. One of the key characteristics, and I think one of the things that is most important with any relationship, is communication. Mm-hmm. Effective communication. It is essential for the growth of a relationship. You've got to be able to, whether it's with your partner, whether it's with a coworker, or whoever it is, you've got to be able to communicate. And, you know, the example I always give when I'm talking about communication, and even when I'm training, I tell, leaders in child welfare, just because you said it doesn't mean you're communicating.
Right.
Communication sometimes requires you to say what I heard was, mm-hmm. you know, to make sure I got the right thing, you know, because,
right.
you know, we're saying two different things sometimes.
Or tell me what you heard.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if I say the word nuclear and I just move on, you may think of bomb, destruction, death. I may be thinking of nuclear family. The mom, mm-hmm. you know. So just because I said the word doesn't mean we communicated. To
right.
me, communication is we're both walking away from our kumbaya moment and we have a clear understanding of what we were trying to say to one another.
That's
and
good.
I think that that's where we have a lot of challenges in relationships, whether it be in an intimate partner relationship or whether it is in relationships with each other. It takes work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to develop and to understand communication. You know, you've said it to me before. You said, you know, Dr. Brock, or you know, David, if you can say to me, oh, that I get it, but that was a little much or whatever, you know, and you know, come back. You know, we had to learn that. And I laughed, you know, because, you know, when you become passionate about mm-hmm. somebody or something, or I should mm-hmm. say, sometimes people misread our passion.
Yes,
you know,
true.
Because I know when working for a second chance, you was like, listen, I don't care if you strip the wallpaper off the wall by accident. I don't care if you crash the car by accident. She said, but what you're not going to do mm-hmm. is harm these children.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, now mm-hmm. you're like, listen, I can tolerate mistakes every day, but when it comes to harming a child, mm-hmm. That's when I'm coming at you with tentacles, any whatever.
It's
I'm
not
coming
gonna
out.
Be a good situation.
It's not going to be a good situation. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you would even say, I'm going to tell you in advance, this is not
a good conversation. Well, see, that was communication. You see that
right.
communication there.
Right.
I announced in advance, this is not
this
a good conversation.
This is not going to be a good conversation, mm-hmm. so I need you to just come in already
Brace
knowing.
Yourself. Mm-hmm.
Put your seatbelt on and your oxygen mask. We're great. Put it on, baby, because we're getting ready to go.
Oh, that is
you
hilarious.
Know, this plane is taking a dip, honey. We're going to go down. So don't be startled by the oxygen mask dropping from above. Matter of fact, put it on first because we get ready to go. But again, it's that communication, and it leads us to a deeper understanding and, truthfully, a stronger connection.
Yes,
you know, between the individuals.
Absolutely,
it leads us there.
Well, because I think, you know, what you're saying is when we dare to lean into authenticity and we can be ourselves in our communication, then we are better aligned and we see each other, right? So as long as we keep that facade up, then we'll never be in relationship. And so I'm going to make some assumptions about what I think you're saying. And you know, a long time ago when I was in graduate school at the University of Pittsburgh, I was introduced
long time ago.
I was introduced to Dr. Peter Senge in organizational leadership, a course I was taking. And so Dr. Peter Senge is one who studies organizations and organizational defense routines and how organizations uses defenses and all this sort of things to not really grow and develop as a strong organization. And one of the things that he talked about is that, so I look over to you today, we both have brown on.
Right.
And so I could say, oh, brown must be Dr. Brock's favorite color. And I said, oh, brown is your favorite color. And you say, no, that's the only thing that I had clean in my my laundry bin. And so that's what I decided to wear. So you see, I made an assumption because I saw you in brown and made an assumption that your favorite color was brown. But then you corrected me. So Peter Senge talks about leaps of abstraction.
Okay.
So that we don't take these leaps of abstraction, saying believing something is such because that's the way we see it from our lens, but rather we go and ask the question.
Gotcha.
So Dr. Brock, I see you have brown on. Is that your favorite color?
Yeah, that's totally different.
That's totally different. Absolutely. Than making an assumption.
Right.
And so I've learned a long time ago not to make assumptions, but to ask the question. And you would be surprised about how people lean into their own assumptions because it's based on their scope. It's based on their experiential learning. It's based on their knowledge base that they then determine what it is for you. And so we have to unlearn how to not make assumptions and ask the questions in relationships.
And I think that leads me to a point that I was going to talk about, and that is building that trust and intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it comes from not making assumptions. When Melissa and I, my wife, who's an amazing young lady, when we were getting together, when we got serious and we decided that, hey, you know what, we want to partner up and do this thing called life together.
Mm-hmm.
I remember sitting down with her and asking her questions and not making assumptions, as you said. And I had to ask her, I said, what are your non-negotiables?
Okay.
What are you not willing to bend on when mm-hmm. it comes to being in relationship with David Allen Brock?
Right.
And I was like, because here's my list of non-negotiables.
How long was that list?
My list was maybe just 99 things. No, I'm just kidding.
99, and I would say and a half.
Right.
Won't do.
You know? But I came in and I realized something, though, at the stage in life I was, because prior to, and I'm putting my tea out, y'all get your cups, and here goes some tea. I'm dishing some tea right now.
All right, let me get a little sip, a little drink here.
Prior to getting a relationship with her, I was dating another young lady.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to the realization, this young lady was a wonderful young lady and everything, and she had a child.
Mm-hmm.
And the age of that child would mean that if I got deeper and went forward with that relationship, I would be back at the stage of a child in the home, caring for a child and things like that, when I was at a different stage of my life.
Right.
So I recognized, to make a long story short, that one of my non-negotiables was I didn't want a parent again. I didn't want, I was past that stage. I'm at the drop the top on the convertible, we out for the weekend stage.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So now I didn't want to do PTA, PTA meetings. Mm-hmm. Sorry, y'all, we'd be crazy here.
Made me choke.
I didn't want to. I thought about doing PTA meetings again, doing Girl Scout cookies or whatever else, going to meetings and things and all that, babysitters and all. That phase is gone for me.
Mm-hmm.
So again, establishing and trying to get to that place of building trust and intimacy, you have to be willing to build that foundation and to really have that communication, as you say, and to put out there, this is what I'm comfortable with, this is what I'm not comfortable with, because as you begin to build that trust, as we talk about evolving in relationships, we get more comfortable with a person as we become, we get more information.
Right.
The more information I get, the more comfortable I am with that individual and able to operate with that individual and not lean into assumptions.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, audience. I'm just, he's made me choke me up. So, but nevertheless, what I wanted to say to you is that I think that that's really good, because you were very clear at the outset, in your relationship, what you were able to do, what your capacity was, right? I don't think we really talk about our capacity.
That's good.
And so, we really have to say, I mean, I know me. I kind of say I need to be unencumbered. That's the word. That's the
I like that word.
That's the fancy
that's
word.
The fancy word.
Unencumbered. Because I want to be able to go and do the things and move about the world.
Right.
But that's why I have so much respect for our caregivers that would do what we do at a Second Chance, because they've paused their lives to take on young people. And so I really honor them. And I would do the same thing, and you would, and you have done the same thing when necessary.
Right.
But if there's a choice, right, I want to be unencumbered.
That part. I like that. Unencumbered.
Unencumbered.
That's our word for the day, everybody. Unencumbered.
Unencumbered. So as he choked me up, because, you know, because I think really more relationships would be more sustainable and lasting if people were to talk about at the outset their non-negotiables.
Yes, and that's important. But you know what? You mentioned something, and I just want to take a moment and shout you and a Second Chance out. You're coming up on your 30th anniversary celebration, celebrating 30 years.
30
over
years.
40,000 children you have serviced, countless caregivers, birth parents. I mean,
about relationships.
Yeah, that's some relationship management there.
Woo.
And it's not always been easy.
No.
But I want to shout you out in a Second Chance in the work that I say we because I'm still connected, we do in the lives of families and children. And so a shout out to you for making sure that children are safe and thriving. So that was our commercial break from our topic for a minute, but we celebrate.
But it's relationships.
Yes, we celebrate a Second Chance.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
We celebrate you.
So getting back to that, and like you said, I mean, a Second Chance and everything has just been about relationships. And so we talked about work, we talked about assumptions, but talk to me about today with all of the learning, all of the...
Well, here we are again, another episode of the What's Up Cuz podcast. I'm Dr. David Brock, and I have the pleasure and honor of being in studio with the one, the only, the always gorgeous, always dressed to perfection, always ready to represent, Dr. Sharon McDaniel. What's up, cuz?
What's up, cuz? What's going on with y'all?
Oh, life is lifing.
You know what? That part, right? As you would say, that part.
It doesn't stop. Life keeps going.
It keeps going and going and going and going until you just say, I've had enough. I'm going to chill for a minute.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And just take a pause, you know, for the cause to rejuvenate. You know, you got to. I'm telling you, we have a lot going on, a lot of things happening and a lot of things, you know, going. Some things we're in control of. And then there's sometimes we're not in control of things.
That's
We got to deal with it as it comes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm grateful for another day, grateful for another opportunity. And as I said, it's always my honor and pleasure to be in studio with you. We always have such a good time. And then we look down and say, oh, my God, where did time go?
I know. We're going to try to keep this to under an hour. Because, you know, it'll be like, oh, 90 minutes later, we just on a topic one.
Right. We didn't get to question one.
Question one. Yeah.
Tune in next time for question two.
That's so true.
So we've done some podcasts and we've got a lot of feedback, and we hope that you, our listeners, are really tuning in. We've tackled some topics and subjects. We just did a recent podcast around domestic violence and intimate partner violence that has gotten a lot of reviews and a lot of comments. And I've heard from a lot of our people that have listened that enjoyed it. And I'm hoping that if you haven't listened to it, that you'll go back and take in that episode, you know, to really get a grasp on what's happening so we can stay on top of what's going on in the world itself, you know. So I know we always bring topics and we try to inform our people, and we're unapologetic about trying to reach our congregation.
There's
the preacher in me.
There's
the bishop. Sorry,
all
y'all.
Right.
To reach our listeners out there in our community. To really educate them and put it where they can get it and take a nugget or two away, you know, so it's always an honor, and we try to do it in such a simplistic fashion. So I'm excited about being in studio again and breaking into another topic that we know will spill over into a deeper walk as we talk about relationships and embracing relationships. And I know today we're coming from not necessarily the aspect of an intimate relationship between lovers or whatever, but we're talking in totality about relationships. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to boil it down, if you will, and center on romantic relationships between male and woman or partners and so forth. But today, we just want to set a stage around relationships, period, because they're essential and we're built. The Bible clearly tells us that we're built for relationships. Mm-hmm. We're not built to be alone. And when I hear people say things like, I don't need nobody and things like that, I look at them like they're a little strange or crazy, right? Because mm-hmm. we are built to give and to receive and to be helpers. The Bible actually says helpers one of another, which right. means, again, we have to be in relationships. So we're going to break into this and have some fun and talk about it and, you know, really see where we go with it. So before we break in, what are your thoughts around this? This was your baby. You brought this to the table.
I mean, I really felt that it was important. And as you said, talking and coming off the podcast of intimate partner violence and just relationships in general, I really thought that we need to talk about relationships. What does that mean? And so as you talked about, we are built to be in relationships, but what relationships, right? I mean, it could be intimate relationships, but it could also be familial relationships. It could be work relationships. So we are conditioned to be in relationships, but I think each of them brings a different a consideration, if you will. So intimate relationships are one thing. Relationships with your coworkers is different. And then you think about the larger community. So we wanted to break that down. And I think it's just really important, particularly as we see the tensions between relationships between Black women and Black men right now. And ultimately, as you said, we'll narrow the conversation down to those type of relationships. But I'm seeing and hearing such toxicity in our community. Mm-hmm. And wanted to uplift, like, I believe in love. I believe in relationships. I believe in wholesome relationships and relationships where people really like each other. And I'm saying whether they like each other at work or church or community and in intimate relationships, whatever those, however that construct of that relationship looks like. So I really wanted to just talk today about how do we introduce the concept of relationships. And, you know, as we think about, you know, we've evolved. I kind of put the blank in terms of the number of decades, but you could certainly say how many decades you've been on this earth.
Right. Twirling around for six decades.
Yeah. Well, me too. But at the end of the day, we've been in relationships for six decades. And so as we dive into it, what has that meant for you? How have you evolved over six decades of being in multiple types of relationships? Yeah.
Well, that's a good question. When you talked about it and talked about coming and we were going to sit down and talk about this, the one thing I began to do is just jot some thoughts down. And one of the things that I thought about was, for me, I think that the evolution of relationships, they're complex sometimes. Mm-hmm, they're complex and they're unique at the same time.
Yes.
You know, and I think processing that sometimes requires sometimes daily, weekly, monthly management, depending on the level of relationship you have with someone. Mm-hmm. And so I think for me, I hope I've evolved it. But when I look back at myself and I can say, and I tease and I say this sometime when I'm talking to people, when my 60-year-old self looks back at 50, he says, And when 50 looks at 40, he says, interesting. Mm. 40 looks at 30 and says, wow. 30 goes all the way back down, and you know, and God help me if I let my 60-year-old self look at the 20. He's like, boy, you was crazy. Out here crazy. You have no clue.
Thank goodness for growth and development.
Exactly. So I think that along the way, I would hope to be able to say and have demonstrated growth and change and development. And you know, I was talking about this Sunday, and even this morning, I was saying that, you know, I recognize now that I'm not a failure. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we say, I failed at this and I failed at that. Mm-hmm. I'm not a failure. I'm like Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison failed thousands of times trying to make the light bulb. Mm-hmm. But when he was interviewed, he said, I'm not a failure. I just discovered 10,000 ways that didn't work.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's mm-hmm. a difference mm-hmm. in that. So mm-hmm. I looked at that and said, you know what? I'm recognizing I'm not a failure. I just found some ways that didn't work, and I had to change and keep on going until I found ways that work. So I think it's daily maintenance again, and it has again that uniqueness. Every relationship, I believe, has a unique concept to it, a unique part that has to be managed by the parties involved. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. So I'll stop there for now.
No, and I was just thinking about as you were talking about failure. I've always looked at failure as opportunities. And so I've never looked at it like, you know, how I think the larger discourse around what failure looks like, oh, something is wrong or you did not do something correctly. But as you said, it's just a really an opportunity to look at things from a different perspective. And John Maxwell has a wonderful book, Failing Forward. And I read that many, 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 many years ago, because when things don't look so well, what is the thing that you failed that you're moving forward? It's new knowledge, right. Like you said. And so when we think about relationships, you know, those that we believe that may have gone astray, there is information in those intimate relationships that didn't work out. So again, looking at failure in the context of it's new information, it's new learning. So I really like what you're saying there.
I like what you said, because I remember when I was in school and one of my professors in the seminary actually was talking about opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I don't get me wrong, I'm wrong maybe about the nationality of people, but I think he said it was Oriental people or something. They don't have the word failure in their dialect. And he mm-hmm. was pointing out that's why they can come to the United States or come into our communities mm-hmm. where we say it's failure, and they'll open up a store, a nail salon, a mm-hmm. hair salon, a clothing mm-hmm. store, mm-hmm. and have success because they see that as opportunity. Right. So there is that word is not in their dialect. So mm-hmm. they don't come around understanding failure. They are looking for opportunity. Right. So when you said that this brought that back to the
that's
fore,
good. Absolutely.
You
know, yeah.
And so I think you're right though. I mean, there's new information, and I think the error would be, and notice I said error and not failure, mm-hmm. the error would be not looking back and applying that information to become a better version of yourself.
That's right. So what is the knowledge that we've gained as a result of failing forward, which is opportunity, right? And so how does that then resonate with you when you think about, and we'll just say relationships at work?
Yeah. Ooh, well, sometimes I think, you know, relationships at work, and I was saying sometimes they're different. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I've learned to do is, for the sake of making the point, categorizing the relationships. Mm-hmm. I understand the difference in being my coworker. I don't have to go to the mall with you. I don't really truly have to like you. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, we're here for a purpose, a specific task to get a job done. I have my assignments, you have yours, and we need to figure out how to come together. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And even if we do disagree agreeably, so that at the end of the day, we accomplish the task or the goal. So when I'm in a work environment with someone, I clearly understand this relationship is put in my box of work relationship mm-hmm, category, mm-hmm. which means after I get done, I punch the clock, I get in my car, I don't have to deal with you until 9 in the next morning. Right. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. For the most part.
Nine so in the next yeah, morning. In the,
right. Mm-hmm. So I have to learn how to, I'm looking for the word that I want to say, put it in the box or category mm-hmm. and put it there so that when I leave work, mm-hmm. I'm leaving it there. Right. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? I'm leaving Sheila and her crazy self over there. Whoever Sheila is, I'm not talking about you. I apologize. I apologize, Sheila, if you're listening. You know, I'm leaving her over there. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And not making it personal.
Right.
I think sometimes we take some things personal that we should not take personal,
right, right.
You know, mm-hmm. and I learned this in over time when, well, this is through some of my work when I was working, even still working with you, but working with you, you had us do a personality test, mm-hmm. the Myers-Briggs. If you all have never done Myers-Briggs, we recommend it. It's highly recommended you do it mm-hmm. because what that did for me was it helped me to understand that that person not necessarily is mean, nasty, or anything. It's just the fact that our personalities don't get along.
Absolutely.
You know, mm-hmm. they don't mix, mm-hmm. and it's okay.
Well, and it's really not so much your personalities, it's the way in which you move about the world.
Yeah.
So as an example, even though I'm doing this podcast, I'm really an introvert. But I say that I'm an extrovert by the fact that I do the work that I do. Right. And so, but I need a lot of time to regroup. So I'll go home and get some energy and come back out. You know, I say, you're like the mayor. You are Mr. Extrovert. I'm like, oh, Lord, does he not know any? I mean, does everybody know him? And so, you know, so you get energy from people and the world. And so sometimes I'm like, okay, what I'm going to do, sir, is you're going to be over there and I'm going to go sit in my corner. So, you know, you'll walk into the party and you'll be like, hey, I'm here. And I'm like, oh, please don't look at me. You know? so really, when you're thinking about that in the context of the office, then, you know, if you're an introvert and you're dealing with extroverts and they're constantly taking from you and you're an introvert, you have to figure out how do you get space to regroup.
Right.
And so that's the thing. It's so not so much your personality, because there's no right or wrong personality. Right. It's just the way in which we move about the world.
And I think you hit something there. I think that we have to manage us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you know what it takes to recharge your batteries, you have to do that. You
right.
have to manage. And you know, like my car or even this cell phone sitting here, this cell phone will get to the place where it'll say you got 2%. And then after 2%, you're done. Until you mm-hmm. give me a charge, mm-hmm, you're done. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes
That's
we
good.
Ignore our 2%,
yes.
our battery levels, the car got a light on, you know, my car come on and it'll pop up and say, do you want me to find you a gas station?
Because
I'm running low. It's like, bing, you got, then after a while, it comes up on my GP, on my screen. You know, do you want me to locate a gas station? I'm like, no, I'm good.
Wow.
But it's trying to tell me, well, I don't know where you're going, sir, but I do recognize you're running low on fuel.
That is so good. And so it prompts a question for me. What happens when you have relationships that drain you?
Ooh.
Have you ever had that before, I wonder?
Yeah. Oh, that was jab. That was a shot fired in the studio, everybody. No, I'm teasing.
I'm just wondering.
Really? I've learned, Doc, that. I'm getting excited about this conversation, y'all. I'm sorry. I've learned that I can love somebody and not like them.
Talk about it.
And so when I don't like you, when you drain me, because I'm not in my makeup. I recognize what I don't like, mm-hmm. but it's necessary is confrontation.
He will run like the road
listen,
runner from confrontation.
You hear me? There was times when I was at the secretary, you would say, Dr. Brock, mm-hmm. you can't do, because I would run from the confrontation and then I would store it up, frustration.
Ooh.
And the frustration would be building up until.
And then the volcano erupted.
And yes. And then mm-hmm. somebody says, you know, one little small thing and it's like. And you're like,
I like those sound effects.
And it's like, and you're sitting there saying, Dr. Brock, I really need you to look at like the reaction to this thing.
That there was
stimulus.
No soda
right,
in
exactly.
the refrigerator
right,
for right. training.
Right. You know? And so you're like losing it. But what I had to recognize was these individuals or things were depleting me,
mm-hmm.
were draining
mm-hmm.
me. And I was not doing the necessary work or mirror work or saying, hey, David, okay, go over there, count to 10. So now, you know, we talked and you were like, count to 10.
Yes.
You know, and now I even ask myself before I respond, is it needful? Is it necessary? And is it wholesome?
Oh, that's good.
You know,
needful,
yeah.
necessary, and wholesome.
Yeah, is it needful for me to? Because I learned now, you know, I'm thankful. I've learned now that I don't have to respond to everything.
Not everything needs a response.
And not at all, mm-hmm. you know. And so I don't have to respond to everything. And then if I do respond, is it a needful response?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And is it uplifting? Is it wholesome? Is it going to help the situation, or is it going to make it even worse? So when I'm contemplating those things, you know, I try to respond from that aspect now. Didn't always, but and I try
that,
now.
Is that in the counting you're thinking
that is
about
in the
that?
Counting of 10. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm mm-hmm. counting that's a good. 10. And sometimes when I get down there, if I'm counting from 10 to 1 and I mm-hmm. get to 2 or 1 and I still don't have, I start over again. 10, 9, 8.
Count to 20. Okay. 20. I need about a 30 yes, right
exactly.
over here.
Exactly. And sometimes, you know what I just say, you know, because it's something in the Bible that the Bible actually says to go in the cool of the
yes,
day.
Yes. Yes.
You know, when you've had a chance to process it and to think about it, you know, because sometimes we respond in the here and now mm-hmm. right in that moment and we do damage,
yes.
you know, because,
I've been
you
here.
Know, yeah, mm-hmm. words have power.
Yes.
And you can't get it back. You can't undo. I tell people all the time, you can't unring a bell. Mm. You know, so once you've rung it and the sound is out, you can't take it back.
That's
so
right.
So when I'm encountering these individuals that are draining to me, I've learned to manage them based on my battery level.
Oh, that's so good.
So if I got 85%, then I can give you like 5% maybe. But if I got 2%, oh, I can't do you today.
Right.
You know,
I've learned how to do that, right? And but one of the things that you're really introducing is this opportunity to announce your battery level.
It's necessary.
You know, because I know what my battery level is, but I have not announced, you know, I really am only on 2%. And so today would not be a good day to have that conversation. And I'll see you tomorrow if that's okay.
You know what? And that's a good point.
That's really good.
That's good because mm-hmm. that's it. And unfortunately, some may take that response as rejection or as, oh, she thinks she all that. No, I'm telling you, if you keep pressing me, I'm going to chop your head off, put you in a blender.
Yeah.
I'm going to feed you to the wolves and everything else.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be looking at me all crazy. Now, I told
you,
Shaquita, to let me go. I told you that I wasn't trying to do this today.
But you've seen me at my 2%, and it's not a good thing. So
exactly.
I'm really trying to, like you said, to do that mirror work where it says, you know, I need to take control so that I do no harm, right? And so I think, but one of the things, though, I think that you're also introducing is that if it's something new that you're starting, you just can't say, sir, I'm on 2%.
Right.
Because that's not going to make sense.
Right, exactly.
So you have to introduce, like, one of the things, the way I'm really dealing with my EQ, as an example, emotional intelligence, is that I am going to now say what my battery level is. So if you've announced that to your loved ones, your colleagues, your work, you know, your church mates or whatever. And so now I'm going to introduce that where my battery level is. So if I'm saying I'm on 2%, you now know that this is not a good time. And that when my battery is recharged, we can have that conversation or go out for dinner or whatever we're going to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's really good and really helpful in terms of preserving those relationships and also dealing with folks who may drain you. But the other thing I would offer for consideration is that we have conversations. We have courageous conversations. There's a book called Courageous Conversations that we've read that really talk about when people are draining you. Right?
Right.
How do we have those courageous conversations with our, and those are typically in our intimate space, our family members, our, you know, intimate partner or whatever, you know, to say, listen, I mean, you know, I'm really drained here. And when we get into these conversations, they're more draining than others. So how do we introduce that into the conversation? And particularly when you think about the context of our faith too.
Yeah. Well, when you were talking, I think it comes down to one of the characteristics when I was thinking about relationships. One of the key characteristics, and I think one of the things that is most important with any relationship is communication.
Mm-hmm.
Effective communication. It is essential for the growth of a relationship. You got to be able to, whether it's with your partner, whether it's with a coworker, whoever it is, you've got to be able to communicate. And, you know, the example I always give when I'm talking about communication and even when I'm training, I tell, leaders in child welfare, just because you said it doesn't mean you're communicating.
Right.
Communication sometimes requires you to say what I heard was,
mm-hmm.
you know, make sure I got the right thing, you know, because,
right.
you know, we're saying two different things sometimes.
Or tell me what you heard.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if I say the word nuclear and I just move on, you may think of bomb, destruction, death. I may be thinking of nuclear family. The mom
mm-hmm.
and you know.
Mm-hmm.
So just because I said the word doesn't mean we communicated.
Right.
To me, communication is we're both walking away from our kumbaya moment and we have a clear understanding of what we were trying to say to one another.
That's
and
good.
I think that that's where we have a lot of challenges in relationships, whether it be in an intimate partner relationship or whether it is in relationships with each other. It takes work, you know, to develop and to understand communication. You know, you've said it to me before. You said, you know, Dr. Brock, or, you know, David, if it, you can say to me, oh, that, I get it, but that was a little much or whatever, you know, and you know, come back. You know, we had to learn that. And I laughed, you know, because, you know, when you become passionate about somebody or something, or I should say, sometimes people misread our passion.
Yes,
you know, because I know when working for a Second Chance, you was like, listen, I don't care if you strip the wallpaper off the wall by accident. I don't care if you crash the car by accident. She said, but what you're not going to do is harm these children.
Right.
You know, now you're like, listen, I can tolerate mistakes every day, but when it comes to harming a child, that's when I'm coming at you with tentacles, any whatever.
It's
I'm coming out. It's not going to be a good situation.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you would even say, I'm going to tell you in advance, this is not
a good conversation. Well, see, that was communication. You see that communication there.
Right.
I announced in advance,
this is not a good conversation. Not going to be a good conversation, so I need you to just come in already
Brace
knowing.
Yourself.
Put your seatbelt on and your oxygen mask. Put it on, baby, because we're getting ready to go.
Oh, that is hilarious.
This plane is taking a dip, honey. We're going to go down. So don't be startled by the oxygen mask dropping from above. Matter of fact, put it on first because we get ready to go. But again, it's that communication, and it leads us to a deeper understanding and, truthfully, a stronger connection.
Yes,
you know, between the individuals.
Absolutely,
it leads us there.
Well, because I think, you know, what you're saying is when we dare to lean into authenticity and we can be ourselves in our communication, then we are better aligned and we see each other, right? So as long as we keep that facade up, then we'll never be in relationship. And so I'm going to make some assumptions about what I think you're saying. And you know, a long time ago when I was in graduate school at the University of Pittsburgh, I was introduced...
Long time ago.
I was introduced to Dr. Peter Senge in organizational leadership, a course I was taking. And so Dr. Peter Senge is one who studies organizations and organizational defense routines and how organizations uses defenses and all this sort of things to not really grow and develop as a strong organization. And one of the things that he talked about is that, so I look over to you today, we both have brown on.
Right.
And so I could say, oh, brown must be Dr. Brock's favorite color. And I said, oh, brown is your favorite color. And you say, no, that's the only thing that I had clean in my my laundry bin. And so that's what I decided to wear. So you see, I made an assumption because I saw you in brown and made an assumption that your favorite color was brown. But then you corrected me. So Peter Senge talks about leaps of abstraction.
Okay.
So that we don't take these leaps of abstraction saying believing something is such because that's the way we see it from our lens, but rather we go and ask the question.
Gotcha.
So Dr. Brock, I see you have brown on. Is that your favorite color?
Yeah, that's totally different.
That's totally different than making an assumption.
Right.
And so I've learned a long time ago not to make assumptions, but to ask the question. And you would be surprised about how people lean into their own assumptions because it's based on their scope. It's based on their experiential learning. It's based on their knowledge base that they then determine what it is for you. And so we have to unlearn how to not make assumptions and ask the questions in relationships.
And I think that leads me to a point that I was going to talk about, and that is building that trust and intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it comes from not making assumptions. When Melissa and I, my wife, who's an amazing young lady, when we were getting together, when we got serious and we decided that, hey, you know what, we want to partner up and do this thing called life together.
Mm-hmm.
I remember sitting down with her and asking her questions and not making assumptions, as you said. And I had to ask her, I said, what are your non-negotiables?
Okay.
What are you not willing to bend on when it comes to being in relationship with David Allen Brock?
Right.
And I was like, because here's my list of non-negotiables.
Well, you know? How long was that list?
My maybe? List was maybe just 99 things. No, I'm just kidding.
99, and I would say, and a half.
Right.
Won't do.
You know? But, you know, but I came in and I realized something, though, at the stage in life I was, because prior to, you know, I'm putting my tea out. Y'all get your cups and here goes some tea. I'm dishing some tea right now.
All right. Let me get a little sip of a little drink here.
Prior to getting a relationship with her, I was dating another young lady. And I came to the realization this young lady was a wonderful young lady and everything. And she had a child. And the age of that child would mean that if I got deeper and went forward with that relationship, I would be back at the stage of a child in the home, you know, caring for a child and things like that when I was at a different stage of my life.
Right.
So I recognized, to make a long story short, that one of my non-negotiables was I didn't want a parent again. I didn't want, you know, I was past that stage. I'm at the drop the top on the convertible, we out for the weekend stage. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, so now I didn't want to do PTA, you know, PTA meetings. Sorry, y'all, we'd be crazy here.
Made me choke. You
know,
here. Uh-huh.
I didn't want to. I thought about, you know, doing PTA meetings again, doing Girl Scout cookies or whatever else, going to meetings and things and all that, babysitters and all. That phase is gone for me. So again, establishing and trying to get to that place of building trust and intimacy, you have to be willing to build that foundation and to really have that communication, as you say, and to put out there, this is what I'm comfortable with, this is what I'm not comfortable with, because as you begin to build that trust, as we talk about evolving in relationships, we get more comfortable with a person as we become, we get more information.
Right.
You know, the more information I get, the more comfortable I am with that individual and able to operate with that individual and not lean into assumptions.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, audience. I'm just, he's made me choke me up. So, but nevertheless, what I wanted to say to you is that I think that that's really good because you were very clear at the outset. In your relationship, what you were able to do, what your capacity was, right? I don't think we really talk about our capacity.
That's good.
And so, you know, we really have to say, I mean, I know me, I kind of say I need to be unencumbered. That's the word. That's the
I like that word.
That's the fancy
that's
word.
The fancy word.
Unencumbered. Because I want to be able to go and do the things and move about the world.
Right.
But that's why I have so much respect for our caregivers that would do what we do at a Second Chance, because they've paused their lives to take on young people. And so I really honor them. And I would do the same thing, and you would, and you have done the same thing when necessary.
Right.
But if there's a choice, right, I want to be unencumbered.
That part. I like that. Unencumbered.
Unencumbered.
That's our word for the day, everybody. Unencumbered.
Unencumbered. So as he choked me up, because, you know, because I think really more relationships would be more sustainable and lasting if people were to talk about at the outset their non-negotiables.
Yes, and that's important. But you know what? You mentioned something, and I just want to take a moment and shout you and a Second Chance out. You're coming up on your 30th anniversary celebration, celebrating 30 years.
30
over
years.
40,000 children you have serviced, countless caregivers, birth parents. I mean,
talking
you,
about relationships.
Yeah, that's some relationship management there. Woo. And it's not always been easy.
No.
But I want to shout you out in a Second Chance in the work that we, because I'm still connected, we do in the lives of families and children. And so a shout out to you for making sure that children are safe and thriving. So that was our commercial break from our topic for a minute, but we celebrate.
But it's relationships.
Yes, we celebrate a Second Chance.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
We celebrate you.
So getting back to that, and like you said, I mean, a Second Chance and everything has just been about relationships. And so we talked about work, we talked about assumptions, but talk to me about today with all of the learning, all of the experience. How do you approach relationships today? And you talked a little bit about your marriage, but are there other relationships that you approach differently based on your six decades of life?
Yeah, I think that for me, the personal growth that I have had over the years caused me to, one, as you said, not go into relationships with a bunch of assumptions. I test the water, if you will. I put a toe in and make sure that the water is warm before I jump in.
Okay.
You know, I'm not interested in jumping into cold water and then I'm in shock and my body's in shock and then I'm sitting there talking about what happened. You know what happened.
You jumped in. You shocked me.
You're right. Mm. So I think that I approach relationships now. I tell people this is the way that I usually say. I said I give people their own canvas and their own paintbrush to paint the picture that you want me to have of you.
Oh wow.
I don't want somebody coming to me and say, oh, you know, that Sharon McDaniel, she's this, she's that, she's the other. No, Sharon has painted a picture for me and I know her. I know her now. And I mean we've peered into, I was thinking about this. I mean, you have been there in my failures of my life, the ones that were not public, thank God, you know, those private failures I've had, you've been there, but you've shown yourself worthy of being there. Mm-hmm. That's a whole nother thing we could talk about. Mm-hmm. Who's worthy of that intimate space? Who's worthy to peer behind the curtain? Mm-hmm. You know, we all the Wizard of Oz. Let's be honest. We all playing the Wizard of Oz in our lives and everybody can't come behind the curtain. So when I'm approaching a new relationship, or whether it's with a person, a family member, a coworker, or whatever, I give them a paintbrush and here's your canvas. And I'm gonna let you paint the picture so that at the end of the day, I'm not moving by assumption, but I'm moving in the information that you provide to me.
That's good. You're
going to tell me who you are.
Right. Oh, that's so good. Well, I mean, what I really appreciate about your approach is that, you know, people have things to say about everybody, right?
Absolutely.
And you get you six decades of life and you're like, that really is your opinion and I don't care about it.
That part.
You know, and or I only care about those that matter.
That matter. Right.
And but I really appreciate that you don't allow others to influence how you see someone, but yet you allow them to draw and create the canvas that they want you to see, right? And then you interrogate that though, because people can draw.
Oh, they can
picture
listen.
Down.
There's some Michelangelos out there.
Not the Michelangelo.
You hear me?
He done brought out his artistry.
You hear me? I mean, they done painted a picture. You know, I tell people all the time, especially with Facebook and social media, they live great lives in Facebook and social media. They are important people.
Important.
And then when you see them, you'd be like, oh, baby.
Yeah.
It is not so.
Uh-uh.
But you're right. You know, because people will paint the picture they want you to see.
Yes.
But I think that the other thing is I've learned in my six decades of time, since we've said it again, being here, I've learned how to say, okay, I know who you are showing me you are, but by the evidence, as they say in court, by the preponderance of the evidence.
Okay, you done brought the lawyer skills out too.
Listen, by the preponderance of the evidence.
You didn't tell me you had a JD.
You are fake news.
He don't want a lawyer. He don't want you to. Now he's a media personality.
You know, seriously, you look at him. And so, and I'm like, and I think Sharon, for me, I've learned that if this is the image you want to portray, enjoy it. Because I'm only going to be in your presence, but for so long, or I'm only going to tolerate you. I'm going to manage me in this situation.
Well, you know, I say a commercial. You always hear me say, is it live or is it Memorex?
That part. Because folks, again, they put forth a good, you know, I love it in church, you know, church world. You say, how you doing? I'm blessed and highly favored. But you can't finance a hot dog. You can't even master a bus pass. And you're talking about how blessed. And I'm not putting people down.
Right.
But I'm telling people, be real about where you are.
Yes.
Walk in authenticity, you know. But the biggest thing is do the work. There's nothing for me. Listen, I don't mind a dupe. I don't mind a whatever. You don't have to always walk around with top shelf or whatever.
Right.
It's on how you work it.
You know? I was watching someone the other day, and she's a top influencer. And she said, listen, I shop anywhere. She said, it's all about how you put it together. And you know me, I will have the authentic and I will have the dupe. And people don't know because they think I'm always just, you know, at the Ave all the time or something.
Right,
you know, and I'm like, oh, no. But the bottom line, though, is, as you're suggesting, if we are in authentic relationships, you can tell me when you're hurt or hurting.
Right,
Right.
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 Absolutely. And so we have to be willing to lean into our vulnerability as well. But we have to create that safe space for relationships, for people to be authentic. And I don't necessarily believe that we always do.
That's true. But I think that one of the things that you said earlier, and if not, I heard it in my head. So,
or I said it some time ago.
Mm-hmm. But it's about that personal work. It's about that mirror work.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's about navigating the, because every relationship brings with it challenges.
Yes.
You know, I mean, there's the good in there and the bad. So it's about doing that mirror work so that you embrace the relationship from a healthy aspect.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, okay, this is the energy you're giving off. You know, people say, I'm going to match your energy. No, I'm not matching your energy. Mm-hmm. Because that means I'm going to have to give out resources that I may necessarily not want to give out. So yes. I'm not matching your energy. Mm-hmm. If you coming crazy, I'm coming crazy. No, I'm not coming crazy.
Yes,
you know, I'm not going to match that energy, but it is about me doing the work necessary so that I can manage me and the challenges that each relationship brings with it.
That's right.
And a lot of times we don't want to do that personal growth.
Well, you know what, as you were talking about that, and I want to give a shout out to Dr. Sean Jenright, who is a professor at Harvard University, who actually has written a book on the four pivots. And the first time I heard this notion of mirror work, because people call it something else, but we read the book at A Second Chance. I know you've read it. We talk about that mirror work. He was talking in the context of race equity and things like that, but it's the same thing. How do we show up and do our mirror work around what's our stuff?
Right.
Because we always want to point the fingers. And I'm like, when you point them fingers, you got so many more pointing back at you. Right. So how do you do your mirror work in terms of how do you show up in relationships? Because, you know, sometimes people, and I know you've met these folks, I think they call them narcissists or something
yes,
like that.
Yes. Know a few of them.
it's always somebody else.
That part.
But it's never them.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, that's probably a book when you're in relationship with a narcissist.
Right.
How does that work?
Right.
So we'll probably talk about that. You know, we're going to bring some professionals because, you know,
that'd be great.
You know, we got people that we know that
absolutely
deal with this every day in terms of relationships. But, you know, you really have to start with yourself. You have to start with yourself because relationships can, you know, as John Maxwell says, leadership, you know, or businesses and everything rises and falls on leadership. I would also suggest that it's also about relationships or about you. Right. How do you show up? Are you willing to have the courageous conversations with people who might be toxic?
Right.
Are you willing to say, hey, I can not be in this space if this is the way we're going to continue? So,
good.
I think that that's what we have to begin to think through in our relationships.
So then, you know, that brings me to a thought that I had earlier as we were preparing and I was thinking, so how do you deal with relationships with toxic people that you can't avoid? It may be a family member. It may be a coworker, your supervisor at work, or let's just be honest, a church member or somebody. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with those toxic relationships that you have to come in contact with?
See, I'm really clear about how I show up in relationships. And I know that there are going to be some relationships that are just, you know, operating on all cylinders and some that will not. It is my responsibility to take ownership of my space, my spirit, my being, if you will. Okay. And so I know if you coming in and you, I think the young people say you, the energy, I think is what they say now. You messing up my energy.
Right.
If you messing up my energy, I got to talk about that because I need my energy to be on point. And if you are the person that I got to interrogate and examine, why is this person messing up my energy?
Okay.
Okay. So I got to.
Okay.
So if the person is always negative, like I can't negative Nancy, I'm sorry if your name is Nancy. As Dr. Brock said,
names have been changed to protect the innocent, but not this time.
That's what they call it. If you negative, I cannot do you.
Right.
So I got to say to you, if you come to me and you're always negative, it brings my spirit down. It changes my energy, the atmosphere.
Right.
So if we're going to interact, we're going to have to figure out this thing because I can't do negative.
Right.
Because I don't want my spirit down. I'm a happy-go-lucky person. I deal with, you know, issues in the way that I, but if it's always I'm encumbered,
right?
Because remember, I say I want to be unencumbered,
right?
But
if
I'm encumbered by your negativity, we can't be in the same space. Mm-hmm. So maybe I need to refer them to a therapist or to counseling, whatever I need to do, but I might need to separate myself from that person, even though it might be a family member or whoever, right. But I'm like, okay, love you, sis. Love you, bro. But I got to see you at another space. And right. I'm okay with that because I got to preserve, you know, we're 6 decades.
Right.
And we got to preserve our faculties. We got to preserve everything we can.
Absolutely.
We fighting for every day.
Listen, every day. Listen, I tell somebody, I wake up in the morning, take my pulse. I'm still here. Praise Jesus.
Because I got to find my keys. Listen. I got to do clappers.
That part. You hear me?
I can't have you messing up my energy, too.
Listen, I'm trying to tell you, I don't have time to be spending it. But you're so right. I think that that's one of the pieces. Again, it's about managing self. That why is this? Why does this person send me, if you will? Why does this person? Why do I feel a certain way around them? Is it something in me?
Yes.
That I can adjust that way it doesn't have that effect? Or is it something really in them? And then, you know, as you said about courageous conversations, I had to have one the other week or so with someone. You know, they were trying to say to me, you know, this person was off the rails, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait, I need you. I said, this is not going to be a good conversation. Because I said, there's no sugar. There's no, you know me, I like a sugary drink, but no, there's sugar. There's not. This is going to be straight talk. No chaser.
What, you have grown.
Yes, I have. And I had to tell them, listen, you also need to understand your behavior has consequences.
That's good.
And I think people don't often realize that. We get so myopic and centered on ourselves and worried about us that we don't sometimes understand your behavior has consequences.
Yes.
And even though I may have to deal with you, you're toxic, but I need you to understand very clearly that there's consequences for how you act. And
that's
one
right.
of the consequences is that you don't have access to me in certain kind of ways.
All
I've
right.
made sure now I've learned and grown. Everybody doesn't have access to me. And I said this, and some people may not understand it, but I've said this even as a pastor and as a leader. Mm-hmm. If I do for the unfaithful, uncommitted individuals the same that I do for the faithful and the committed, what is the sense in staying faithful and committed?
That's right.
If they're getting the same response, if everybody gets the same response from you, what's the sense in being committed?
Yeah.
There is a benefit and a bonus that you get by being committed. You
That's
know, and so a lot of times we don't look at that. And I've learned that relationships are reciprocal. And I was listening to Lord Hill.
Relationships should be.
Should be. Yeah. Words are
important because they're not necessarily reciprocal. And I learned this a long time ago, that you can be someone's friend, but they don't have to be your friend in return.
That part. All of that.
And so you got to examine, are they my friend in return?
Yeah.
I see myself, I'm putting myself out there, and then when I need them,
can't find them.
Where you at, sis? Where you at, bro?
And
you don't do something. The crickets. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And so when you talk about reciprocity is a choice.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I speaking of that, but I love that. So I sit corrected since we're sitting in the studio. Mm-hmm. That relationships should be.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, if they're not, to your point, then somebody is going to be empty. And I don't care how much you pour that glass. If it's empty, ain't nothing
coming out.
Mm-hmm. I don't care how pretty it is. This is most expensive.
That's a lovely glass.
Yes, it's gorgeous. You know,
but it's empty.
But it's empty. Mm-hmm. You know, I paid $5 million for that.
But it's empty.
It has nothing. It looks good, but it's really not offering what I need to sustain me. Mm-hmm. If I'm thirsty and nothing's coming out,
I'm parsed.
If nothing's coming out,
I have nothing.
You know, right? I don't have nothing to give you, and I think it's okay to sometimes tell somebody, I don't have nothing for you. Mm-hmm. Not right now.
Because
I'm on my 2%.
Right. Or I'm empty.
And I think it's we sometimes are not honest about where we are.
Yes.
You know, because we think we're preserving the relationship by not really saying what we feel or what we think, but we're sometimes not honest.
Or watch this, because I had to get honest too. Sometimes because you are always giving and you're empty, but then you go and do, then you got an attitude.
Right.
Because you didn't articulate. So you mad at yourself and mad at the world because you did not articulate that you were on empty and you put yourself out there and you mad.
And
mad at yourself because you didn't do your mirror work. You didn't go and say, and you were not having a courageous conversation to say, I'm on empty.
Right. And I think that goes to, there's a saying that people often say that are running around right now, that they say, you teach people how to treat you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You teach people how to treat you, what you're willing to tolerate, what you're not willing to tolerate. Because Melissa gave me her list of her things that was like, these are my non-negotiables.
Right.
I'm very clear that I'm not moving left or right. I am solidified in these things.
Right.
And I gave her mine, you know. And I think that sometimes we have to really be clear and really be honest about where we are and how we are approaching things. And again, I'm loving this. You know, I'm approaching empty. Your car tells you that it's running out of gas. Your cell phone tells you. I mean, we have all these things that are indicators.
Yes.
And we look past, what do they say? You're not looking at red flags.
Mm.
There's some red flags. And you're looking past the red flags.
They're ablazed.
You know, there's a forest fire. You're talking about
everything.
Everything is well.
I think this little cup can, you know, take that. No. So, I mean, I think to your point, maturity helps us. You know, we are six decades in, and so maturity helps us to get to a place where we can have those courageous conversations or we can have our non-negotiables. And but we still are tested because we're still in relationship and we center humanity. And so we don't want to harm. And so we do sometimes put ourselves out there. But I encourage you, as I continue to encourage myself, to lean into that vulnerability and begin to, even those spaces that we have not mastered, if you will, in relationships, let's continue to lean in and move forward. So I know that you and I, we could go on and on and on, but we are going to have move this conversation to more of a micro level, really talking about intimate relationships and marriages and partnerships as we move forward to the next conversation. We're going to have some therapist who works in marriage and family therapy join us. And so I'm looking forward to that. What about you?
I actually am looking forward to it. I think that there is so much more. We've just scratched the surface in this moment, just laying a foundation about relationships, and much of what we have said is interchangeable when it comes to a love relationship between partners or whatever else. So I'm looking forward to hearing how to manage, because as you said earlier, there seems to be toxicity between male, female, and African-American men and African-American women. And when an African-American man becomes successful, he seems to go out and find a woman of another persuasion, if you will, and it doesn't. So these things need to be, conversations need to be had. They need to be managed, because I think, you know, again, there's one of the books that we love is Love and Respect. You know, that I think that is a phenomenal book. If you've never read it and you are in a relationship, that's another plug. We're saying to you, get that book, read that book. I think it will change how you approach things. And for me, one point I was going to make when you were talking, and I'll throw it out here and then we can kind of sum up and end with that, is we talked about relationships, whether they require communication. We talked about trusting an individual, and as you begin to trust them, you give them more access to you. It's kind of what we do when we're doing the training about privacy squares.
Value.
You know, I can ask you what kind of car you drive, what kind of, you know, what city you live in, but as I drill down and start talking about, well, what's your social security number, what's your bank account number, the closer I get, you know, it requires a higher level of trust. And then we talked about growth. But the other thing I wanted to talk about and say in the last couple minutes that we have here is, I've learned that relationships, they're not what's the word I want to say? They're not
transactional.
They're not static.
Static.
Mm-hmm. They're not static. Mm-hmm. They require flexibility and here's a word, adaptability.
Yes.
So when you think about relationships, in order to grow and to change, you it's important to adapt because every relationship is going to bring changes
yes.
and challenges. Mm-hmm. And as you grow,
yes.
I mean, as I said earlier, you are certainly not the same. You're the by name. Yes. Sharon McDaniel. Mm-hmm. Or you were Sharon back in, we called you Shanny back in the day. Y'all
right.
don't know. Now I went all back to the Shanny days.
Shanny
you
know? Day. Yeah.
But when you look at Shanny, when you look at who you were at 7 and 8 and younger, mm-hmm. you're still in name that person.
Right.
But you have evolved.
Evolved.
Several times. Mm-hmm, I mean, mm-hmm. several times. You've rebirthed several times.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
it, each aspect, you know, when you become a spouse, that's another change.
That's
when
right.
you become a mom, that's another
that's
change.
Right.
When you're an employer and a businesswoman, that's another change. When you're in the boardroom, that's another change.
That's
so
exactly right.
you have to manage all these things. So talk for a second about how you handle being able to be adaptive in situations and relationships.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so essential. You know, as you said earlier, you know, we are people need different things from us. So we need to understand I can't act like I'm an employer in the boardroom.
Right.
I'm a trustee, right?
Right.
So that's a different relationship than if I'm being an employer.
Right.
There's some things around just my personality that lend itself to each space. If I'm a mom, I gotta leave all the CEO trustee stuff at home.
Right.
I mean,
right.
or at those spaces,
right.
not bringing that home.
Exactly.
I am a mom at home. I'm a grandmom.
Right.
And so that requires a different relationship. So it's really understanding where you are and what's required of you in that space and being willing to lean into what it's not. And being able to say, okay, where am I?
Right. Right.
Where am I?
Right.
You better check that. You are not at work. You know, Taylor right. Taylor will say to me in a minute, Mom, I think you're acting like a CEO. I'm like, oh, Taylor, I'm so sorry. So, you know, sometimes I got to be checked because like, okay, I didn't mean to come across that way.
Right.
So understand where you are. So having people in your life to say, I need you to check that.
Yeah.
That's helped me.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's important, again, is having those people that have that space and
yes.
have that place. I think it helps us manage us when we say to somebody, well, you know, here, I was thinking this, or here's this situation. You know, I've called you several times, said, okay, I just need to talk. I need my therapist
yeah.
for a minute because mm-hmm. I'm about to go local, postal, and yeah, I just need it. Like, okay, what I need you to do is count to 29 because you up there. Okay, now breathe in, breathe out.
You know, yes.
Let's get some coping
skills.
We're
doing some yoga.
Yeah, you know, you mm-hmm. got to do this. So, and I think that, you know, I'm learning. You know, it's funny because my kids will say to me when they look at me interacting with my grandchildren, they say, you've changed. You're soft. You're whatever. I said, no, I'm not soft. I haven't changed. I said, because if I have to be,
right,
I will be. But I'm leaving it to you all to be disciplinary.
Right. It's a different role.
Listen, my job is to sugar them up, get them hyped on sugar, and send them home wired for sound. That's my job. You know, and I'm very
so
good
funny.
At it. I'm very good at it. Yeah.
We know that yeah. closet upstairs.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, yes. So, but again, I think that you're right, and in being adaptive, it is. And that was good that you said. I've got to learn what part of me to bring into the room.
Yes.
And I've got to also understand or know or get to know what that person needs
mm-hmm,
from me,
mm-hmm.
you know, because if, as you said, if you go into the boardroom acting like the president and CEO, they're going to be looking at you saying, that don't work.
You're not that here.
Yeah, mm-hmm, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, figure out who you are and where you are. And I think we have to do that. When it comes to relationships,
yes.
when especially as we're going to move further in our next part of this conversation, talking with some clinicians and everything about managing relationships. I believe, even though I have learned ways that did not work, I believe that we can be successful as men and women in healthy, loving reciprocal relationships. And I think it is necessary to have that conversation. And I'm looking forward to having that conversation and bringing those opinions and those thoughts. And that's going to be a good one there.
I think so. I absolutely do. And I can't wait till we have that opportunity to have our therapist really lean in with us.
Yeah, that's going to be phenomenal. So, I mean, this has been great. I know we got to get out of here, get out of studio. Again, we appreciate the topic, and there's more to come as we lean into managing relationships, because we have them everywhere. We're not built to live on an island by ourselves. We have to interact with people.
Yes,
period. You know? And we can't blow a gasket everywhere we go.
No,
that was
can't
a note
do
to,
that.
Note to self.
Note to self.
You know,
there's gonna be a lot of notes to self.
I'm working on me. You know,
I'm
telling you, because nothing makes me blow a gasket more than when you know. Let me leave that for the next part, because I'm going to tell a story on myself. But so I'm learning not to blow a gasket. I'm learning to compartmentalize and deal and give what is necessary, healthy, and wholesome for that relationship.
That's really good.
So we're coming in. Any closing thoughts you'd like to share?
No, I just think that I'm looking forward to having this conversation, growing and developing as, you know, relationships, as you said, we're always evolving and always adaptive in our processes. So just looking to have our audience learn along with us. And so, can't wait.
I can't wait. Well, listen, whatever you do, don't stop growing. Don't stop learning. Don't stop applying and looking for information. It makes you a better version of yourself tomorrow than you were today. So on behalf of Dr. Sharon McDaniel and myself, I say, what's up, cuz?
What's up, cuz?
Until we meet again, you guys stay strong.